Proceed to the sixth case, Mattia versus Kingston, Mr. Palmer. Mr. Palmer. You are?
Your Honor, I'm Angela Colmenero. I'm a law student at the University of Notre Dame.
All right.
And
Mr. Palmer is the lawyer in attendance, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is on the case.
Yes.
All right.
May it please the Court. Like I said earlier, my name is Angela Colmenero, and I'm here today with my co-counsel, Matt Nussbaum, and we are representing the appellate in this case, Mr. Randall Mattia. Your Honor, the District Court in the Eastern District of Wisconsin granted a certificate of appealability as to one issue, whether the government's failure to disclose the non-prosecution agreement prior to trial and the failure to correct Mr. Hurdle's testimony, the government's key witness, violated Mr. Mattia's due process rights under Brady v. Maryland. There are essentially two due process tests at issue in this case, and in both instances, a due process violation will be evident if the government suppressed evidence was material in that case. The first one at issue is a failure to disclose. And a failure to disclose is important because the error is considered material if there is a reasonable probability that had the evidence been disclosed to the defendant, the result of the proceeding would have been different. And the second tested issue here today...
Well, that's what's so difficult here, because the evidence against Mattia is overwhelming, especially, I don't understand, you don't really deal with it in your briefs. How could Hurdle have made up this story? The facts that he gave were the facts of the crime, and they weren't publicly known, so I don't understand... How it could be that he was making this stuff up.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the government's strongest argument is that Mr. Hurdle gave this testimony, or he entered into the non-prosecution agreement and gave this information to the detective in Manitowoc County before he actually signed the agreement. However, Mr. Hurdle was incarcerated.
No, that's not the point. That's not the point at all. The point, of course, he was desperate for a deal and not be prosecuted for burglary and so on. But the point is, how could he have made up this, no matter how eager he was to curry favor with the government, the details that he revealed to them could only have come from Mattia. There isn't any way in which this could be a fabrication. It's not as if someone says, oh, I saw Mattia hit her over the head. No, he gives details about the crime scene and circumstances and the injury and so on, which only... the murderer knew.
Well, yes, Your Honor. He contacted the detectives in Manitowoc County because he wanted to enter into this deal. And he had every incentive to lie or fabricate.
Well, no, you're not engaging with my question. How could he have fabricated these facts when they're all corroborated, when they're all facts that only the murderer or someone the murderer spoke to would know?
Well, Your Honor, honestly, we don't know if he fabricated the facts because at trial we never...
You don't follow me. How could he have made up these facts? They're the facts of the crime. They're only known to the murderer. If you hadn't talked to the murderer or someone the murderer had confessed to, how on earth would you know the details that Mattia testified to?
Well, Your Honor, I assume that Mr. Mattia and Mr. Hurdle did have this discussion, and he did tell him information concerning the crime, but it does not...
Precisely. So how could there be any harm here?
Well, because it doesn't erase the fact that the prosecution never disclosed...
It doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter what inducements were offered to Mattia. The point is... he gave testimony that only someone who had gotten a confession from the murderer could have given. So his testimony is certifiably truthful, unless I've missed something, whether or not he gave it because he had overwhelming inducements to do so. It's the prejudice issue.
Yes.
No prejudice, because even if all this had been disclosed about, you know, the four burglaries had been disclosed to the jury, the government would still have pointed out, look, if who but where could Hurdle have gotten this testimony from except that Mattiah had confessed to him? There's no other possible source for it.
Well, yes, Your Honor, we see that. However, there is still the fact that they failed to disclose this, and this could have been...
Oh, what? It didn't make any difference, because how could the jury disbelieve Hurtel, Hurdle? How could they disbelieve him when he gives... when what he says could only have come from the murderer?
Your Honor, it just does not, at least in...
It would be irrational for the jury to disbelieve him.
Well, this just was one more evidence that could have attacked his credibility.
It doesn't matter. His credibility, what certifies him as credible, has nothing to do with his motivation. It has to do with the fact that he's disclosing information was not publicly available, that he could only have gotten from Mattiah.
Yes, Your Honor. However, we strongly believe that the failure to disclose, the government withheld this information from Mr. Mattiah, and as I said earlier, this...
So what? It made no difference, because it... You don't get my point. Do you have a theory as to that Hurtel fabricated this, the information that he testified to? He made it up about her head hitting a rock and so on?
Your Honor, we believe that Mr. Hurdle, when he was in the Sheboygan County Jail, and he talked to Detective Mark Bart in Manitowoc County about the deal, that he had every incentive to lie in
order
to get a deal.
You're not answering my question. Do you think he did lie, that he made up these details of the crime?
Your Honor, we don't know. I don't know if he lied or not.
You have a theory as to how he somehow could have known these things, even if he hadn't been told by Mattiah.
No, we don't have a theory how he could have known these.
Did Mr. Hurdle talk to the wife of the defendant?
Yes, he did. He had many conversations with Judy Mattiah, that was Mr. Mattiah's wife, and got details and talked to her about the incident.
Well, then that's your response to Judge Posner, isn't it?
Yes.
Where did she get the details?
I assume from Mr. Mattiah.
Right, precisely.
I see that my time in for rebuttal, I'm eating into that. So, in conclusion, Your Honor, we just ask that you remand the case to the district court, ordering them to grant the petition for habeas corpus, and also to ask Wisconsin to grant us a new trial.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Colomara. Mr. Freemont.
Good morning. James Freimuth. Representing the Wisconsin State Custodian. Appellate Mattiah argues that the state court's decisions constitute an unreasonable application of Supreme Court precedent.
What kind of sentence was Hurdle facing on those four burglary charges that were dropped?
I'm not sure what class felony the burglaries were. I'm guessing a 10-year felony, so 10 times 4.
40 years?
40 years, I believe, but I would have to check the statute.
Did he have any other charges against him that weren't dropped, or did this clear the slate so he could
There were two Sheboygan County cases pending. One of them was the one that was part of the agreement with the four burglaries. There was another one in which he pled, but I don't believe it was part of the agreement. As part of the agreement, he received $1,000 and a favorable parole letter, as I understand it.
What is this $1,000? I don't understand this. Is this payment for his testimony?
My understanding is it's from the rewards program, the
Crime
Stoppers reward program. That, and it wasn't, I guess, even part of the deal. I probably shouldn't have misspoke when I said that. I think it was the prosecutor didn't have control over that, but would make it known to the people that he was cooperating. As the court has indicated, the focus here is on prejudice of the due process test set issue. And I think in a nutshell, what the court has identified as the key issue with respect to Mr. Mattiah is that this lack of the jury hearing the dismissed charges that Mr. Hurdle had as part of the deal would not explain how Mr. Hurdle was able to give police significant, accurate details about the murder, if not from Mr. Mattiah himself, or from someone who had spoken to them. And as the judge indicated, Mr. Hurdle spoke apparently for several hours on the phone with the defendant's wife. The defendant's wife testified, however, that she knew very little about the murder. That
she said she only knew what she saw in the papers, wasn't that it?
I don't know if that's exactly it, but she mentioned only that it was in a park and that the victim had, I believe, tree bark embedded in the victim's head. She indicated, testified that her information, whatever she knew, came from Mr. Hurdle, that he was the one who was giving her all kinds of information about what happened. There's no question that Mr. Hurdle was angling for a deal here. And so the timing of the agreement itself probably isn't as crucial as perhaps I suggested in my brief. The focus is he was able to give accurate, significant details about this that had not been disclosed to the public.
He gave some of the details prior to any deal being discussed. That
the timeline was his deal was effected on August 15th, 1994. The case became public with the charging of Mr. Mataya on August 24th. There were conversations in February and March, several months before the deal, in which Mr. Hurdle had been supplying information about the crime, including such significant details as the bite mark on the victim's breast, that the victim's that Mataya, according to Mr. Hurdle, told him that he had, that Mataya had stripped the victim's clothes to make it look like a rape, that he had taken the victim's purse, which was weighed down with a bunch of keys, thrown it into a pond, that Mr. Mataya, that the victim had died because of a blow to the head or several blows to the head. It was not a knifing, it was not a shooting. Significant details that only could have come from somebody intimate with the crime. The state's brief does list all the circumstantial evidence on top of that. I won't recite in detail that unless the court wishes to ask me about that. But I would ask the court to affirm. Unless there's further questions, I would ask the court to affirm.
So the purse wasn't found. What is the significance of his testimony about the purse? Is there independent evidence about that?
The significance would be that he was aware that this was, that the victim had a large number of keys because she, her job required her to have that, and so that's why the purse was a sort of an idiosyncratic detail about the event because of that.
It's really not material, but you refer to the Crivens case and say it was a direct federal appeal. It wasn't. It was a state habeas.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was pre-ADEPA as well.
I apologize.
But it doesn't really fit into the matter, but Judge Posner and I happen to be on that case together.
I should know better. Sorry. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you very much. All right. Mr. Nussbaum?
Yeah, the first thing I'd like to address is the question as to how Mr. Hurdle could have known these details. And certainly one way, a plausible way he could have known these details was through correspondence with Mr. Mataya. He also had significant correspondence, though, with the detectives in charge of investigating this case. In fact, he sought them out looking for a deal. And between February and August, when the deal was eventually executed, there was significant interchange between those two persons. We do not mean to accuse the detectives of planting facts in his head. What we do mean to say, though, is that had certain disclosures been made before the case, and had Hurdle been corrected at trial, this would have been able to be pursued before the jury. And reasonable doubt is all that Mataya would have needed in this case.
Well, was the detective deposed and asked about this?
My recollection
of the post-conviction proceedings.
As part of the post-conviction proceedings? I believe that he was, Your Honor.
So he said he didn't plant facts.
He did not. He said, yes, that he did not plant the facts.
So you don't have any, you're not, have no theory that the wife actually didn't tell the truth on the stand and knew about the details that she could relate them to Hurdle?
Certainly the wife could have known details and relayed those to Hurdle. Many of those, as mentioned before, could have come from Mr. Mattia, but of course many of those could have come from her correspondence or at least interaction with the detectives or what she had heard throughout the community. Your Honor, the government also cites circumstantial evidence that standing alone, they say, would have led the jury to the same conclusion. This circumstantial evidence, however, namely the dental consultant's testimony, the testimony of the stepson, Daniel Fleischer, as well as the testimony of Robert Cole, is not as strong as the government would have this court believe. For example, the dental consultant, though he found consistencies between Mr. Mattia's dentition and the dentition on Ms. Claflin's breast, and I see that my time has...
Well, you may conclude your thoughts.
Thank you, Your Honor. Though he found consistencies, he was unable to say within a medical certainty that those were the actual marks. With that, I will conclude.
All right, thank you. That's fine. All right, thanks to all counsel. And a special thanks, Mr. Palmer, to you for accepting this appointment, and to Ms. Colmenero and Mr. Nussbaum for participating in the program and adequately representing Mr. Mattia. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.